Welcome to the Production Talk podcast with me, Jan of mixartist.com.au. In this podcast series, we celebrate the modern way of producing music. We want to talk about all things related to songwriting, recording at home, and music production. So if you produce your music at home, this is the place to be. Please subscribe and recommend this podcast to all your friends. This is the Production Talk podcast, episode 23. Welcome back to the Production Talk podcast. It's great to have you on board again. This episode is quite special because the topic that we need to talk about today is probably concerning all of us to, well, varying degrees. Today, I would like to speak about monetizing your music. That's a big subject, and there's heaps to say. But before we get into this, let me just quickly make an announcement. Today, for the very first time on this podcast, I would like to announce the gear giveaway feature. This was made possible thanks to my friend Nick from Byron Music, lovely guy, and also thanks to the amazing folks from CMI Music and Audio in Melbourne, who donated an AKG starter kit, a microphone and a headphone. If you would like to be the lucky winner, you have to stick around to the end of the episode when we announce how to win the AKG microphone and headphones. So stick around. Okay, let's move on. So back to the topic today. It's all about monetizing your music. So the funny story about music and monetizing music is that, look, if you were here for the money in the first place, chances are you would choose a career as a banker, a lawyer, or someplace else in the corporate world. So making money in music is one of the harder ways to make a living. And I think we are all aware about that. So let's just keep this in mind for now. And a lot of us are probably here for the fun of it and for the creative outlet that we get from playing our music. It's actually really good for our mental health. And, you know, in a time where we deal with a pandemic and where societies as a whole are more divided than ever, it's music that brings people back together. So we need music more than ever these days, in my personal opinion. So, and let me personally thank you for being a musician and for sticking with it and not giving up despite the difficulties that we face these days and despite how hard it can be to make money. So why is it so hard to make money with music? Well, historically speaking, it's never been really easy, but we've certainly had a few developments over the last decades that basically led to the situation that we're in today. So if we just rewind for a moment and go back to, let's say, the 80s and 90s, when there was a lot of money in the music industry, when bands had huge budgets, hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce major records, and they booked themselves into studios for months at a time. That was a time when the music marketing worked quite differently. Physical sales were the only option back then. Vinyl and cassette tapes were the only consumer products that were majorly successful. However, then CDs came along and the bosses of the record companies had a huge party because they managed to produce a cheaper product. A CD was cheaper to produce than a vinyl record and sell it back to the people who already had the record and now wanted to switch formats for about, 50% more roundabout. That depended on which record and where you lived. But I remember buying vinyl records for about 20. And then later, as a young bloke, I bought the same CD for 30. The bosses of the record companies hit the jackpot big time. And they had only one interest, to keep their business model going and going and going, ideally uninterrupted. So when the personal computer became more and more popular, they didn't quite see the danger on the horizon. People started to copy the content of CDs to their computers and started to share it freely on the internet. This was the height of platforms such as Napster, LimeWire and so on, peer-to-peer networks where people could freely share music. And this led to a lot of music piracy, which was not new to the music industry, but it was of unprecedented dimensions. So effectively, music piracy led to a strong decline in record sales. And the record companies at that time completely missed the opportunity to switch their business model and to be innovative and sell music online. Instead, they decided to fight piracy with lawyers. That was only mildly successful. At a large, the consumers changed their behavior, and the record companies didn't really see that. They were just trying to defend their previous business model. And I believe they missed the opportunity because other industries at that time already managed to sell products digitally quite successfully. So unfortunately, it took till way into the 2000s until streaming platforms became a thing. And interestingly, this was led by Apple, as well as others that we should mention. But now the Apple iTunes Store was probably one of the earlier, bigger, more successful businesses that provided the foundation for today's streaming services by first selling downloads legally. At that time, the entire consumer market had changed entirely. And I remember how friends of mine proudly showed me their little USB hard drives, which contained 10,000 songs as MP3s, each one compressed down to a megabyte or so. They all sounded absolutely terrible, but they had a large quantity. Well, this is really sad in many ways, but what happened back then was a huge shift in consumer behavior. And in the end, it was the businesses who managed to cater for that who succeeded and led to the next evolution of the music market. We could definitely talk about the fault here, and we can now point the finger at Napster and other platforms. We can also point the finger at the consumers who had no other choice but to pirate music online because there was literally no legal options at that time. However, I don't think that pointing fingers is helpful at all at this stage. So we just need to face the fact that the consumers changed their behavior, the way they listen to music. And the big bosses of the record companies left that field to the piracy markets. And that's a huge oversight. It's a huge business mistake, in my personal opinion. So while record sales declined year by year around this time, the touring industry boomed consistently for many, many, many years. So that was somewhat okay because one leg of the industry was in decline, the other one was on the rise. Effectively, we saw a reversal from the 90s to the 2000s. While in the 90s, many musicians and record companies made their money from selling CDs and merchandise and so on, and they used the tour to promote more record sales. Later in the 2000s, it sort of turned upside down. While in the mid-2000s, there was not too much money to be made anymore with CD sales. However, the touring industry got stronger and stronger. And effectively, then musicians could still tour and make money this way. So in some ways, the album became the reason why they could tour again and make money on tour. So it went sort of back to front. And that went on for quite some time. So the streaming services came in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, got stronger and stronger in the 2010s. And what we've seen then is that, well, it's better than piracy because musicians at least get a small amount of money. However, we all know, and if you've listened to episode 21, you know my opinion about streaming services, my love-hate relationship that I have with them. But at least they allowed to turn the predominantly pirating industry into a certain legal industry online, which is by itself, of course, something that we admire. But we also know how little they pay. So that's a real problem and that's ongoing. However, for significant time in the 2010s. This could be compensated by playing gigs, by touring, and you know, the associated sale of merchandising that went along. But then came the pandemic, and that changed everything again. So state after state closed their live sound venues, and musicians stayed home. And that now means that the only remaining stream of income is suddenly died out. And that's obviously a real problem, and many musicians have been struggling significantly since. So that's where we're at. And in many ways, we have hit rock bottom, and that's obviously a real concern. However, we can look at it in two ways. We can look at the glass being half full or the glass being half empty. And I personally tend to be the optimistic side. I like to look at the glass being half full. Just from experience, I've observed that most things in life and also in the industry and also in business come and go in waves. And if there is a certain period of high income, soon enough, eventually it will crash and there will be some kind of an industry overhaul or a disruption, so to speak. And I think that's where we are at this point. So I think we have hit rock bottom, and now there will be people who give up and move away, and there will be people who stick around. And I really hope that you're one of the musicians who sticks around right now, because I would place a bet on the music industry picking up again over the next few years. COVID cannot paralyze the music industry forever. People need music. People need live music. People need to come together and dance. And I have a dear belief that this will never, never, ever change. So I predict that it will pick up again. And if you stick around, you're the person who will be around when the industry picks up again. And that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity to rise with the industry. And I hope that you take this approach as well, that you take the time now to get yourself ready, to write songs, to produce your music, to have something ready to go when the doors open again, and then rise with it. And while the live sound industry might still be a little bit slow here and there, it already has picked up in some countries, and that's really good. So I think now is the time to set up your infrastructure and make sure you are all set up to reap the benefits when the doors open for your local venues and you get more gigs again. So maybe just a couple of general thoughts about making money with music. I'm of the belief that if you decide to make your music with the sole purpose of making money, chances are that's not going to work too well. I find that with many things in life, and music is definitely one of them, you need to create something that speaks to people's hearts and make it available to them. The return will come eventually if you provide benefit to people, if you provide something that people love. However, you need to consider that it's a huge investment first. You need to learn your instrument. You need to learn songwriting. Chances are you've learned this already if you listen to this podcast, but you know how much time you've invested already. And that won't stop anytime soon. So you cannot make any short-term gains with music, but instead think long-term and set yourself up to make a little bit of money with your first release, and then a little bit more with the second, and a little bit more with the third, and eventually it can turn into something. But don't set yourself up for disappointment by expecting significant returns really quickly. This is probably not going to happen. It's the same thing with success in the top 10 or charts. So if you start your music career with the first release and you expect that you write a number one hit record, chances are you set yourself up for disappointment. That's unrealistic. So most people who get to the top won't get there with their first release, although this has happened, but it's a rare occurrence. Most of the time, people have been around for a long time and consistently produced music, and then one day it just happened. And monetizing your music is a little bit like that. So what we want to do today is talk about the infrastructure that you need to set up to allow money to return back to you. And I would like to talk you through a couple of steps that I believe are important. So here comes step number one for your money-making infrastructure. Step number one is to set yourself up with an organization that collects royalties for you. If you're in Australia, this would be APRA. However, each country has a different organization. So let's say if you're in the United States, this might be the American Federation for Musicians. Or if you were in the UK, you might need to deal with the Authors Licensing and Collecting Society. I'm going to put a list with different copyright collection organizations in the show notes for your country. So what do they actually do? Look, every time your music is played, let's say on a radio station, the radio stations will pay these copyright collection organizations some money for that. And from there, it will stream back to the artists who wrote the music. And if that's you and you haven't signed up, then this money will never show in your bank account. So therefore, make sure you sign up with APRA if you're in Australia and look up the show notes for your organization for other countries. So this is very important because it goes even one step further. They also collect money for live performances, including your own. So if you perform a gig, you can fill out a sheet, return this back, and eventually they will collect money for you and return it your way. Royalties, generally speaking, start with pennies and cents first. So in your first year of being an APRA member, you might just make very little money. But it's important to set up your infrastructure. It's definitely worth it in the long run, because it sort of builds up. It's like compound interest, because the more music you release, the more it adds up. And the music from years ago may still contribute and add to the returns you get every year. So with an organization such as APRA, money will automatically flow your way. In most countries, these organizations are for free when you're a musician. This could be different for record companies and so on. However, you need to check with your organization. Some countries have more than one organization, so it may make sense to compare and see which one gives you the better conditions. You can also ask around and see what your fellow muso friends do. Maybe they have recommendations which one to choose. Good, okay. Let's move on. You've signed up for your copyright collection organization such as APRA, and now the infrastructure is set that every time you produce music and it's played, some money can come your way. When you release a new song, you need to log back on and register the song with your organization so they know which songs belong to you. If you're in a band, you need to discuss what we call the split. That's usually divided mutually, depending on the contribution. So usually the songwriters and the musicians who write the lyrics may get a few more points than, let's say, a hired studio musician. But in the end, the split is up for you to discuss. So therefore, you can sign up and a song can be therefore registered to, I don't know, 20% for you and 10% for somebody else. That depends on how you set it up. But make it a personal habit that every time you release music that you log back onto your account and update your records there so that returns can flow your way. Over the last few years, I've spoken to quite a few musicians and many are already signed up to APRA. However, I've also come across quite a few that have never considered and just basically said, well, I can't be bothered. It's cents anyway, so I don't care. Well, in all honesty, I think this is a little bit sad because, yes, it might be cents in the first year, but by not signing up at all and not putting the effort in, you basically rule out any returns for the future. So I would say it's a must-do for all active musicians to sign up and make sure that that money can find its way back to you. Step number two, choose the right distributor for you. So music distribution is something we briefly touched on before. There are services that you can upload your music to and they will move the music from there to all the streaming services in the world. Well, most of them usually, or at least all the big ones. This is important so that your music is available to on many platforms and therefore you get a further reach. We also discussed the pros and cons of that in a different episode. I believe it was not in episode 21, where I sort of recommended to consider cutting out the really low-paying ones. Well, you know what? If you want to hear more about this argument, why don't you just go back and listen to episode 21 one more time? However, you know, I'll leave this up to you, of course. That's entirely your call. Some of these services will ask you for a one-off payment. Other services offer yearly subscriptions. Some services charge you per song. Others give you a flat rate and allow you to release as many songs as you want in a certain cycle. Some of these distributors allow only stereo files, others allow Dolby Atmos mixes these days. There are quite a few differences. For example, some of these distributors allow you to set up a split and then automatically split the income according to how you and your fellow musicians decided to split. There are quite a few things to consider, so test or check each one and make sure you've got the right one for your needs. In this case, it's a little bit of an investment. However, it's necessary in order to see any returns from streaming. The question, of course, is could you go directly to the streaming services? And the answer is definitely yes, this is possible. So you can bypass the distribution steps if you want to. However, be prepared to invest a fair bit of manual labor in signing up with all the different services, uploading individually. They have different requirements. So it's quite a labor-intensive workflow to get your music out to all these streaming services. So therefore, a music distributor may be worth the investment. I'll leave this up to you to decide. However, if you want to get your music out there, it's sort of a common step these days. Let's move on. Step number three. Have you considered sync licensing? So sync licensing effectively is an additional income stream that you can open up in addition to all the streaming. Which means that if you make your music available for sync licensing, businesses across the world or individuals across the world can buy your music for a small fee and use it legally, let's say, in their advertisements, or in a TV series, or maybe a Hollywood blockbuster. That may depend. It's usually something smaller. Maybe even in a podcast. Guess what? The music that you listened to at the beginning of my podcast was written by somebody, I believe, in Scandinavia, if I remember correctly. It was then put up on a sync licensing service, and I bought the license from there to use the music on my podcast. So the money that I spent there will go back to the music composer. The idea behind sync licensing is that they're non-exclusive, so I don't own the music. Somebody else might also use the same piece of music, and I'm fine with that. So therefore, the composer has the ability to sell the music not once, but several times. Although, of course, the agreements may differ. In rare cases, sync licensing is done exclusively, so only one brand can buy it, and that is usually a lot more expensive. If you consider to put out your music via sync licensing, I'd recommend to produce your music in two ways. The normal mix that you submit to the streaming services, as well as an instrumental version, means without all the vocals. This is necessary because in many situations, music will become the background for, let's say, a TV commercial or a TV series. And the vocals may cause trouble with the dialogue of the TV show. So therefore, TV producers often like instrumental music as the background music. The idea is to basically do both. Have your music produced normally for all the streaming services, and make both versions, with vocals and without, available on for sync licensing. A couple of the sync licensing services that I would like to point out are Pond5, MusicBed, Epidemic Sound, and so on. There's, of course, a couple more. For more details, see the show notes. The next step is to book yourself as many gigs as you can and play as many concerts as possible. The more you're out there, the better. Of course, it's about the income that you get from gigs, but that's not all. Gigs are also a great investment to build your following and build your audience. I would say that 20 people who dance wildly at your show are worth a lot more than 100 clicks or 1,000 clicks on Facebook. Because it makes people feel something when they are at a gig with you on stage having just a great time. It's something to remember. While a click on Facebook, well, it's not, you know, people won't remember that usually. So when it comes to gigs, make sure that you get paid fairly. The conditions need to be negotiated, of course, and it is a smart idea to contact your local union for musicians. Each country usually, or most countries have unions for musicians, and they are probably quite well equipped to give you fair suggestions for minimum wages. Sooner or later, you will come across a venue that just can't afford this much. Well, that's a venue that you should probably apply the 80-20 principle to, and just don't contact anymore. Instead, focus on the ones that do pay fairly and book more gigs there. Plan out your year. Plan ahead. Many event organizers plan gigs way in advance. So set up an online calendar, such as a Google calendar or something around those lines, for your band where everybody's locked in. That way, it's easy to book. Try to team up with other bands. Maybe a band from another city can open up for you and your local crowd. And in return, you can travel to their city and open up for them and their local crowd. Suddenly you double your reach. So, and also along the way, probably you make some good friends. If you can, engage with the people. Hang around before and after the show. Speak to people. Have a drink together, have a good time, introduce yourself, ask for their names, engage with your audience. Don't be distant. Instead, build connections, talk to them, ask what they like about it, ask what other music they like. Ask them if they want to sign up to your newsletter so they know when you're back in town to meet up next time. Good. And of course, gigs lead to another step. The next step, of course, is merchandising. If you play gigs without merchandising, well, you miss a great opportunity. Merchandising is fantastic because you win twice. You can sell t-shirts, buttons, what have you, patches, all kinds of things to your fan base. And you can probably make a little profit from that. In addition, they will now proudly wear your t-shirts and effectively advertise for you. That's fantastic. So it's a win-win situation. It's just not cool not to do anything. Make sure you've got something available. Sell merchandise through your website or your Facebook page. And for every single show, make sure you've got some merchandise around. Merchandising is a great way to generate an additional income. There are also online services that make ordering merchandising and selling merchandising very, very easy. Bandcamp is just one of those many services that I recommend in this context. So make sure you read up on that and get started. If you don't have merchandising yet, this is a must do. Don't miss out on that. And the last step for today is to set up a membership subscription for your diehard fans. This is something that can be done through many websites these days, and the idea must be that you allow a certain limited number of people extra access to you and your life. It could be that every once in a while you have meet and greets where you hang out online with your fans. It might be that you share additional content, additional videos, making ofs, and so on behind a certain paywall where people need to subscribe to be part of it. You will be surprised. It seems a little bit unlikely at first, but actually diehard fans are happy to do that if they get additional value and to get a bit closer to you. So, subscription services are actually a good way to make a little bit of additional income. It might not be the right thing for beginners, but for more established acts, this is almost compulsory, I would say. If you don't have this, you definitely miss out. Okay, so now let's sum it all up. We've spoken about quite a few different steps. Each step by itself requires a little bit of work to set it up and will not immediately generate huge incomes. But the sum of all of it will eventually add up. It's like compound interest. The more you fill up your catalog, the more royalties you will see. And then don't forget time. The longer you are active as a musician, the more followers you will eventually get. And the royalties from old releases still come rolling in while the new ones are added. So the more music you produce, the stronger your catalog grows, and eventually the more return you get. It's a work in progress. Do not expect short-term gains. Plan for the long run. But make sure you don't miss any of these core parts, because you need to set up your infrastructure now if you want to see returns in the future. I know, as a matter of fact, that I have not yet covered all the possible income streams for musicians. This is just some of the standards, but it should get you started. So getting started is the most important element. So after finishing this podcast, make sure you get straight to work, sign yourself up. There's more information in the show notes, so get in there and click your way around. It is time to get back to our podcast giveaway. So thanks again to my friend Nick from Byron Music, who approached me and made all of this possible. And also thank you so much to CMI Music and Audio from Melbourne, who were so kind to donate an AKG starter kit for today's giveaway. So what's up for grabs? A package containing the AKG Lyra microphone, as well as an AKG K371 headphone. So what do you have to do to win? It's very simple. All you have to do is grab the URL for this episode and share it on your social media. It's available in the show notes, and there's a step-by-step guide how to take part in this giveaway. Step number one, share this episode on your social media. Step number two, hashtag Production Talk Podcast, as well as all the friends that you would like to invite. And step number three, make sure you have it all online before Monday, December 6th, 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. The winner will be announced in next week's episode. That's it. So this is it for this episode. You have a few things to do, I'm sure. Go to the show notes, go through it one more time. Some of the steps you may have done already. Hopefully there were a couple of steps among that are new to you. So get straight into it, sign yourself up, make sure you take action and finish up your infrastructure to monetize your music. If you like this episode, please recommend it to all your friends and all your fellow musicians. Pass it around from band to band, from artist to artist, because I think there are lots of musicians out there who could benefit from this episode. If you're a new listener, welcome so much and thank you so much for joining in today. It's really amazing to have you on board. You can also sign up to our Facebook group. It's called the Production Talk Podcast Community. I'm there every day of the week, and if you want to have a chat, reach out to me there. For now, thank you so much for being on board. And if you decide to go for the giveaway, fingers crossed for you, I wish you heaps of luck. Talk to you next week.